Straight to the point.
It was.
All about that. Okay, let's move on to item D, presentation of the draft. Final report of the City of Franklin, employee classification and compensation study. Mr. Liberto.
What I want to do is get the consultant who's going to give this.
Jolene?
Joe Allen. This is Joe Allen Earl, principal and co-owner of Gulf HR USA.
That was Alderwoman there.
I'm sorry, Alderwoman. Did I mumble that?
No, I didn't, you said
mean to,
both
I didn't
times.
Mean to be to get you worked up there, Dan. Okay, you okay, Dan? If you hit the floor, we know you're not. Okay, you're on.
Okay, good evening. My name is Joellen Earl. It's good to see you again. I look back, last I was here was at the beginning of March when we talked about paving plan, design, and pay plan. So tonight I'm here to talk about the study, the results of the study, and some of it you've heard already, and maybe I'll go over that a little bit quicker, but I did want to give you a comprehensive report that and PowerPoint presentation which covers all aspects of the study. So the outline for this evening starts out with the scope of work, and it goes through the entire process from the job evaluation to the proposed classification plan, job titles, the compensation and benefits survey that we conducted, a proposed compensation plan, how you would implement the classification and compensation plans, how you would administer it in the future. And then there were a few other study components that we were asked to take a look at that are covered in the presentation and in the report. As far as the scope of work is concerned, we were out here in the winter, really, to kick off the study with the employees. We had some project meetings ahead of time to talk about the various components. I came out to talk to you all at the beginning of March about, again, the pay philosophy, and the comparable communities and the pay plan design. So we went ahead and we determined the comparable communities. We distributed materials to the employees so they could get going as far as looking at their own jobs and filling out the questionnaires. And then we conducted a job analysis. We came back on site, met with employees, and conducted that part of the study. At the same time, we were doing the salary and benefit survey, and then we conducted that analysis by looking at all of the survey data we received. So at this point, we're at the draft of the final report. You may recall that I mentioned to you that we like to get the report pretty much to a finalized stage. However, it's important that the elected officials have an opportunity to weigh in. I was here on the 11th of September and met with the department heads and presented the report. So people can ask questions, I can give clarifications. If there's additional information that's needed to be included in the report, we have the time to do that now before it's actually finalized. So there is an appeals process as well in the event any of the employees feel as if we missed something, and we can start that process after today, and then we'll finalize the report after we get all of the feedback. The first thing that we did was the job evaluation, and in this study there were 84 positions or classifications that we looked at. And you can see that in order to determine the internal equity, meaning how the positions relate to each other within the organization, we go through a job evaluation. So the employees fill out questionnaires, we came back on site, we interviewed employees, and then we looked at their jobs, not the person, but the position, in relation to all of these factors, ranging from education and work experience all the way down to supervision, working conditions, and technology.
This presentation is not your packet, per se.
So when we came back on site, we looked at the job descriptions of all the employees. We looked at the job analysis questionnaires that we received that were completed, the comments of the supervisors, and then we talked to the employees. As a result of those meetings and looking at all of the information, we scored the questionnaires, and then we sorted them, and that's how we developed the classification. And some of the positions were actually reclassified as a result of this process. When we started asking employees how their jobs changed, we then took that into consideration when we developed that classification. So the table one that is in your report, it's just after the narrative section, I think it's page 26, shows the classification plan. And it's divided into 14 grades. Grades 1 through 3 are clerical and support positions. Grades 4 through 6 are administrative and technical. 7 through 10 are supervisory and advanced technical positions. And then the remaining grades, 11 through 14, are executive and management. The next thing we did was the compensation and benefits survey. And you may recall when I was here, we talked about communities that are comparable to Franklin. And we had done an analysis and looked at all of the factors that are listed here, the population, municipal property, tax levy, all the way down to your general obligation debt and your shared revenues. We sorted that information. We looked at the communities that you traditionally compared to, and we made a recommendation on the communities that we thought were best and most comparable to. And those communities, there were 16 of them, 14 of them are on the slide, Brookfield and Caledonia all the way to Wauwatosa and West Bend. So we had 14 communities that were chosen, and we sent them a survey with benefits and salary questions. We were asking for specific information about those two categories. In your request for proposal, it was required that we receive a 100% response rate, which we did. It was difficult, and one thing you may recall me telling you the night that I sat here in March was, if anything slows this process down, it's the salary survey. And we did send out the salary survey. We requested responses in April and in May, kept following up, and the last response we received was at the end of July. So it took us a while to get the information, but we did get it. We did have one community that we had used in another study in the same period of time in Wisconsin, and because we had comprehensive data in that study, we used that data. So they didn't respond with a new question, with a new response rate to Franklin, but because we had just had a different survey done with them, we were able to get the information. Did end up with 100% response. The other thing that we were asked to do was include the North Shore Fire Department, which we did, and they responded as well. And then you also asked for some private sector data, and we did do that as well. And the Director of Administration actually personally reached out to 8 companies and asked for those companies to respond to our salary survey. He thought about 5 were going to, and we ended up with 2 responses. So Appendix D has that information, and that response rate was 25%.
Sorry to interrupt. This is okay to interrupt. Of the community that did not actually respond, but you used, which community was that?
It was Fond du Lac.
Okay, and then who requested North Shore Fire Department to be included?
That was one of the ones the Common Council authorized at the beginning, because it is in our region, and they do have a similar size department. But it was part of the original selection by the Common Council of the comparable communities.
Okay, thank you.
I had one.
Alderman Schmidt.
Among the communities that you included in this survey, one of them was Fitchburg, I guess, which seems a little bit out of the realm of the Milwaukee area. How did that factor in to be connected or parallel to the Franklin evaluation?
So in the Appendix B, in this report, so it's after the narrative, you'll see the criteria that we used to determine comparability. And these are the criteria on the slide. So we went back to source data that we could get, and we evaluated all of this information, and we came up with a ranking of the community. So Fitchburg scored high enough based on all of these criteria to be considered to be comparable to Franklin. So it was based on this analysis.
Is Fitchburg, I know it's a growing community, is their population similar to Franklin's now?
Fitchburg has a population of about a little over 25,000. So our cutoff for scoring out of a total of 100 points, meaning 100 points is exactly Franklin, was 70. And Fitchburg scored 73.
Joel, are you looking at which page of this stuff?
I am looking at Appendix B,
page 3.
And again, they move forward with those particular comparable communities after the Common Council saw a presentation on it and approved a motion recommendation on which ones to use.
Thank you.
So after we received the survey information, when we put the survey together and we asked for information about salaries, we defined every position in the survey. And the reason why we do that is because we want to make sure that we're getting actual data that is valid. So, for example, a position in Franklin that has the title of secretary may be called administrative assistant elsewhere. So by defining the position for which we're seeking information, we know that we're going to get comparable information. The next thing that we do is we actually look at all of the data, and we start to ask questions about whether or not it makes sense for the study. And in the case of Franklin, I think I probably reached out to maybe 8 communities with a series of questions to make sure that I was understanding the data correctly. Mark Dane and I talked about it as well, and they asked a lot of questions, so we really drilled down with the communities to make sure that we had the data correct. In the appendix that has all of the detailed salary data, Appendix C, you will see that if for some reason we decided not to use a data point, we highlighted it, and then on the next worksheet, you'll see it removed, and there's a comma as to why. So we wanted you to see everything that we actually analyzed, and then if we decided that it was not comparable, or it just did not make sense for what we were analyzing, and in some cases, after verifying it with communities, we remove the data. So if there are 2 worksheets for the same position, that means we actually remove data. If there's only 1 sheet worksheet for a position, that means we accepted all of the data. The other thing in the salary data that's important to note is that we prefer to work with salary ranges, meaning a community that has an identified minimum and maximum for a position. There are some communities that replied with actual salary data, but the range is preferred to look at the market, because what we want to establish is a minimum and a maximum for a position. So fortunately, in your study, we had a lot of salary range data that we received. So while some communities reported actual salaries, we did not have to take that into account because we had enough data without it. In the event we only received actual salaries, we have done analysis in the past where we have had to build ranges around an actual salary, but that was not necessary in this study. One other question that comes up from time to time is whether or not the data is actually the market, meaning some communities, and especially as a result of the recession, may not have adjusted salaries for a period of years. So when we look at this, we take that into consideration. However, it still is the market for the position, meaning if someone decides to leave the employment of Franklin and go to New Berlin, for example, and they haven't given raises in a few years, whatever that salary is, that's the salary they're going to make. So the market is what it is today. We took a snapshot of it in 2015, and that's the data we received. And then the last part of the survey related to benefits, and we did survey the other communities for many benefits for Franklin. Medical insurance, health insurance, dental insurance, all types of medical insurance, retirement benefits, and then other paid leave like vacation, holidays, personal leave. And then there were a few other categories such as bereavement. And again, all of this information, there is a narrative about it in the report about the findings, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But Appendix F has every data sheet with the different benefits, the different communities, and then the information that we received. So the proposed compensation plan is Table 2. It's Table 2. It's on page 29 of the report. And what we did in Table 2 was we included compensation information at the 65th percentile and at the 70th percentile, and then we calculated pay ranges for Franklin at the 70th percentile. When we discussed pay philosophy in March, the council, actually not that night, afterwards, discussed looking at pay ranges at the 70th percentile. So that's why you see that. The Table 2 is a summary of all of the data that was developed as through the study. So if you look at page 29, on the left side you can see the position title. Then the JFA score is the actual score of the questionnaire that I mentioned when we were looking at internal equity and grouping the positions into pay ranges or grades. Then you'll see salary survey data, minimum and maximum salary at the 65th percentile, at the 70th percentile, and then the pay ranges that were calculated, and in this case at the 70th percentile. Franklin actual salaries for employees is in the far right column. So you can see how the actual salaries that are being paid today relate to the salary ranges at the 70th percentile. A note on this worksheet, if a salary all the way on the right side is, do they have it?
Yes.
Okay. In green, it means that the position is below the minimum recommended salary at the 70th percentile. If it is in blue, it is below if it's green, it's below at the 65th and 70th percentile. And if it's in blue, it's below the minimum at the 70th percentile.
Joel, excuse me one second. I got to say this just out loud, just so it's on the record. I know we all know this, but as you look down at the titles, remember we're talking about titles, not people, and don't associate a name with the title when you're doing your references as to, oh, that's high, oh, that's low. It's the job, not the person.
Yes.
Had to put that in.
Yes. Thank you. So table two is a summary. Okay, table one is the classification plan. Table two is a summary of everything. You have salary survey data at the 65th and 70th percentile, and then a pay range calculated at the 70th percentile. And again, there's the 14 grades. And they're into four categories, clerical and support staff, administrative and technical, supervisory and advanced technical, and then executive and management. Another thing to look at.
Excuse me, Joanne. Alderman Mayor.
Why are there so many position titles that don't have the 65th percentile and 70th percentile salary survey.
The salary survey, I believe we surveyed for about 40 positions. And so the positions that don't have data, we did not include in the salary survey. Okay, so the way that we set the pay ranges, we look at all of the information we receive for the positions in that grade, and then we do a little bit of averaging. We tie them to the lowest grade in the band. So if you're just looking on the first page there, grade 11, which has a starting salary of $73,000, then grade 12 is tied to that, grade 13 is tied to 12, grade 14 is tied to 13. Okay, but we look at all of the data for all of the positions that we receive within that category.
So if you're color-coding these, some of them are color-coded, but they don't have any, you know, supporting data to back up that color code?
Right. If it's green, if the actual salary is highlighted in green, it means that it's below the minimum at the pay range is calculated at the 65th and 70th percentile.
But if there's no information for the 65th and 70th percentile and it's still showing green, how do you get?
The next table has everything calculated by 65th and 70th. So you can refer to that table and look at the actual salary and see where it's below.
But you said that you didn't collect the information on a lot of these positions.
Okay, I'm sorry. So all of the positions in that grade, so in that one salary there, that's green in grade 11, the range that is in salary range is at the 70th percentile is applied to those three positions. So we use internal equity, that the second column that has all those numbers, the columns, the numbers that score close together becomes a grade. So in this case, in grade 11, there's three positions that score closer. We then set the recommended pay based on internal equity. So because those three jobs scored closely, we recommend the same pay range for the three jobs. So you don't necessarily need market salary data in order to recommend a pay range. You use external equity, which is the market and the salary survey, and then internal equity, which is how all the positions scored in relation to one another.
So it's kind of an average and almost a guess.
It's not a
guess.
It's theoretical the way that we do this, and we do look at all of the data. We do some averaging if we have a lot of data within a grade to make sure that everything looks correct. And the next slide that I'm going to go over is how we tie it all together. So there is some logic on how we're recommending these grades and the ranges for each grade. So between each pay grade, there's a 7.5% increase from the minimum starting. So grade 1 at the minimum, grade 2 minimum pay is 7.5% higher than grade 1. Grade 3 is 7.5% higher than grade 2. So it is tied together that way. Now, within a category. So as I mentioned, there's four categories. It might be different between grade 3 and grade 4 because you're moving into a new category of jobs. But within each category, the starting pay is 7.5% higher. The other thing that we look at is what should the spread of the range be? So at the lowest grades in the plan, there's a 30% spread from minimum pay to maximum. Those are grades 1 through 6. Grades 7 through 10 have a 32.5% spread from minimum to maximum. And then grades 11 through 14 have a 35% spread from minimum to maximum.
Okay, is that a good spot? Because Alderman Mayer.
Yes.
Alderman Mayer.
Thank you. My question is very, very similar, and I think it's probably the same, but I'm not following you. If I could give you an example, maybe you could explain to me. Page 30, down toward the bottom, the inspection permit clerk. JFA score is 395, then there's no data, and then the salary is listed in blue. If there's no data, how did you get that salary in blue.
Okay. So if you go back to the classification plan, which is Table 1, on page 27 or 26, you will see that there is the fourth column over, and it says range on it. And what that shows is the skill level that is necessary for a job to fall into that grade. So in your example of the job that scored 395, it's in grade 5. Every position that scored between 380 and 410 is in grade 5. Because we look at internal equity in order to develop a skill level, and then we set pay based on the skill level. So we don't necessarily need market data to set the pay. We look at the skill level, and then the data that we do have for that skill level, we look at that data as well as all of the data and how it relates to the other grades. So what drives it is the classification plan, the internal equity, and then we take market data and look at that in relation to the classification plan and the internal equity.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Okay. So how would you go about implementing something like this? Oh, I'm sorry. I missed one thing. The next table, table 3, is the pay plan, and it's calculated at 4 different percentiles, 50th, 60th, 65th, and 75th. And on page 35, you can see an example of a pay plan for the city. So when we talked about pay plan design in March, we talked about having a hybrid system for the city. And what is recommended for you is that any employee that's an exempt employee have a pay range that's an open range, meaning there's a minimum and a maximum, and there's no increments in between. If there's a non-exempt employee, it's recommended that there's a minimum and a maximum, but there's 3 increments before they move into the open range. So that's a hybrid plan. It allows some increments for non-exempt employees, and for exempt employees, it's an open range. So how would you implement a plan such as this? Obviously, you have to look at everyone's current salary, and that's why that is on table 2, so to give you an idea of where your incumbents are in relation to the pay ranges, and in this case at the 70th percentile. So what we always recommend is if an employee's pay is below the minimum salary, that they should be brought up at least to the minimum. That is the market rate for the position, and in this case at the 70th percentile. So if that person left the employment of the city and you had to go out and hire someone, it's likely that you would end up hiring them at a higher wage. So if someone's below the minimum, we recommend they move to the minimum, at least. The second part of it is if an employee's current pay is within the range, if they're an exempt employee, then they just get slotted in the range. If they are a non-exempt employee, they would move to the closest increment without losing money or into the open range, depending on where their salary is. So that's what we recommend at a minimum. Now, there's other questions that come up about tenure and where people should be in the range, and that's really more of a city discussion. It's a budget discussion that you may have. We can certainly give suggestions on what you could do, but at a minimum, that's how we recommend you. And then as far as the future is concerned, one way that you can look at this compensation plan to make sure that it stays up with the market is now that you have the communities considered to be comparable to Franklin, every year you can, during budget when and the city is developing the budget, you can survey the comparable communities and ask them if they're making an adjustment to their pay ranges. You could average that. It could be put into the budget to say generally there's a 2% cost of living or general increase. And then you can adjust your ranges by that amount to make sure that you're staying current with the market. If you do that, employees fall below the range again, they move up. Employees are outside the range until they fall back into it. They would not receive an increase. But that's how you would say it with market as far as your ranges are concerned.
Any other questions?
Hold on.
How many of the employees show that they're below the minimum? How many are within range and how many are above?
I don't have that exact number. I can go through and count, but I off the top of my head, I would say at the 70th percentile, there might be about 20.
37.
That are below.
37 is what?
At the 65th, it's 22.
That are below.
Yes.
So 37 out of, what, 84 positions?
Well, there's 84 positions, but there's more employees.
There's about 140 individuals.
Right.
So there's 84 categories.
So in the 70th percentile, there'd be 37 of the 140 that are below the minimum. At the 65th percentile, there's 22 of the 140 that are below the minimum.
Just a reminder of this percentile, well, it means the 50th percentile, half of the competing communities are above and half are below. At 65% are below what we would pay, and 35 are above. At the 70th, 70% are below, 30% are above. So the Common Council asked for the study at 65%. We want to be better than 65% of the market, and at 70%. We wanted to see what the numbers were to be better than.
Well, I wondered, you made a statement very early on about the appeals process today, you said, with that. So are you talking about if anyone of the employees are unhappy with this, you need to have that information before you leave today?
Oh, no. Starting today.
Okay.
It's up to the city to determine what the time frame is for that. And the what we would look at, and we can do it remotely, if an employee says, I don't think that the score of my job is correct, okay, that the internal comparability piece. Then we say, okay, look at the questionnaire and tell us what we missed or what should have been answered differently and why. So there needs to be some explanation as to what's different, because remember, we had them, at all the employees, and who, by the way, were very helpful, and I would say that at the end, but I can say it now, people were responsive and they were really great and engaged in the interviews. But they reviewed their job descriptions. They were able to fill out their questionnaires. Their supervisors were able to comment. So, and then we interviewed them. So if we could have missed something. So that's why now that everybody has seen this, they might say, hey, they might give us more information than we might have to make adjustments.
Could you describe the appeal process?
We have a form that people will have to fill out, and we're asking them to look at whether or not they think, again, the job is not, the score is not correct as far as where it falls in the 14 grades. That's one reason to appeal. Another reason to appeal would be if they feel that the market data is incorrect as well. So they have to read this and see, based on our analysis, where they think it's flawed, explain to us why, and then we can respond to it.
Okay, thank you.
Alderman Taylor, then Alderman Mayor.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to be, I have 37 out of 140, and then I have 22 out of 140. Which was the 65th and which was the 70th?
22 was the 65th.
Okay, thank you.
Alderman Mayor.
You did meet with all the employees, right, Mark? And went over this with all the employees, I thought?
The study results?
Yeah.
No, but the memo that I gave you as a cover letter indicated is that starting after today, the Common Council had a chance. Then between now and October 5th, I would anticipate having a series of meetings with each department or however it best works out to give them an opportunity to at least talk directly with me. It's obviously not something built in for Joe Ellen to do over and over and over with groups, but I'm pretty well engaged in what she's done and the manner that they've done and what the conclusions are.
Okay.
So Dana and I would be happy with me.
Okay, and at that point, the appeals process might kick in for those.
Well, I guess I would look for, you know, it would be convenient to get some sort of at least tentative motion that conceptually it's worth moving forward with it, because I would not want to move out from here today, begin working an appeals process, only to have, you know, a common council tell me that for some reason we have no interest in things. I believe it's a study that's very consistent with practices in the state and in this profession, that she's followed normal procedures. So getting that guidance that said, you know what, we think you, we anticipate moving forward, and it's a matter of fine-tuning it, picking which range we're at, and so go ahead, Mark, move forward with the appeals process so that you maybe have that done in time when we decide which, you know, which percentile to be at, the 65th or 70th or 60th. You've got those details of the appeal process resolved.
Okay, thanks.
Just a reminder, we're talking about 220 people in 85 positions, so there could be something that we missed. But I will tell you, the amount of time and effort put into this by Mr. Liberta and Ms. Zahn, unbelievable. And they caught stuff all throughout the process that made perfect sense to the consultant, but in our unique circumstances, they fixed it. So, yeah, Alderman Taylor.
Thank you, Your Honor. Real quick, you mentioned that you're going to have a meeting with department heads and departments. They're going to be individual, right? You're not going to have one department in the same meeting with another department, because if I see there you have departments lumped together in categories, and you could have a situation where you have a department head wanting to voice concerns that maybe the other department head may not feel comfortable having that conversation, because you are in a, so are there going to be separate? We're going to have, we're meeting with the DPW, we're not going to be meeting with the nurses at the same time, like Bill and Jerry. I mean, they're not going to do that.
I will have as many of them as necessary, and they will, some I imagine will break across department lines and some through. For example, I've only got one scheduled right now, and that's sewer and water. I imagine the engineering portion of that division will more likely meet with City Hall group. I'm sure I'll meet with police command staff, but I'll probably do dispatchers separately because the study sort of treats them differently, their impacts are different. So I will have as many of them as necessary, and if I have one with one group and a subgroup comes back and says this didn't really address us, I think we'd like to have a separate meeting.
I see you have health nurses and mechanics. I mean, they're in the same category 7. And those are different jobs, and you, like I said, I think you should allow those meetings to be, if they want to have it separate individually without others, they should be able to have that.
Absolutely. If anyone comes individually and says, hey, can I schedule something to talk with you separately?
I'm talking about even departments. I mean, yeah. A department as a whole.
Yeah, no, I already know departments will be largely separated, although there might be a lot of overlap, for example. City Hall. There are a lot of similar positions spread throughout the department of City Hall.
Thank you.
The effort here, by the way, do you have your hand? The effort here is to develop a pay plan that's fair to our employees. Fair is fair, and the definition of fair is, you know, sometimes in the eye of the beholder, but the intention here is to do what's right. Alderman Mayor.
That's well noted. The 220 employees total?
The study didn't go that far, because that count would include police and fire unionized personnel.
The unionized,
which would not.
So there's 140 non-exempt.
Right.
Non-represented.
So what's non-exempt?
Non-exempt are people that are eligible to earn overtime. So the Fair Labor Standards Act, there's a test that has to be done to determine if a person is exempt. An executive position would be exempt salary. They work as needed, and they get the same salary. 2 hours or 20 hours or 50 hours, they get the
That's the spirit of an exempt employee. A non-exempt employee is if your work week's 40 hours and you work 42 hours, you would get 2 hours of overtime.
So we're talking non-represented.
No.
We're talking represented, too. We're talking management, too.
That's correct. No, non-representative means they're not represented by union, which
correct.
Is, well, a large portion of our workforce. Represented is police and fire. It's that easy. Exempt are salaried employees, and they're not in the union.
Correct. They're non-represented.
My head said, wait a minute, think about that. Non-exempt are hourly employees. Just think of them as hourly employees. They come in, they punch a clock, they're here, they're, you know. So you got four differentiations. One of them has three overlaps. Two of them. Three overlaps.
They're really two entirely separate differentiations.
Right.
You're represented or non-represented, you're exempt or non-exempt.
Okay.
Alderman Mayor.
She done?
I have three more slides.
Yeah, for now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
No, that's okay. Sorry.
Unless you've been demoted.
Yeah, a lot of time and effort's been put into this, and I know all three, Mark and Dana and the person here, have put a lot of time in this, but our employees are the single most important part of our whole operation, and so to take the time to do this right is very, very, very important. So I don't know that I would be comfortable approving anything tonight, maybe conceptually, but not really approving it until we hear from the employees, until we get that report back after you've met with everyone. Just wanted to put that out there.
Well, the request is to approve the draft concept. Because, yes, there's still work to be done. But we also need to recognize that this is there is issues in the budget that relate to this document. Whether it gets approved is a whole different story. Joel, back to you.
Just a few more quick things. So, in administering this system, in administering a classification plan, again, that's your table one. There's three times when you're going to look at changing that. If you create a new job, if you abolish a job, or if something changes in the job. It could be new certifications that are needed or new procedures that need to be followed that may impact the level of the job in the classification plan. So Mark and Dana now have a system that we use to develop this that they can now administer. And we've been through it together, so they're pretty well versed on it. There were just a few other components of the study. We talked a little bit about the Fair Labor Standards Act. We looked at all of the positions and their exempt or non-exempt status. We thought everything looked really good. The only two recommendations we're making is that your assistant director of public works position change from non-exempt, meaning hourly and eligible for overtime, to exempt, primarily because of the supervisory component, and then the planner to and planner from exempt to non-exempt. They are exempt positions now, but they don't have supervisory responsibility, they don't have professional certifications, so we don't feel as if they should be exempt under the Fair Labor Standards Act. Another area that you asked us to look at is compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act. One of the factors that we looked at, which has two parts, is working conditions, physical requirements, and then the actual working conditions, whether you're exposed to the elements or, you know, how unpleasant is it. In your job descriptions, it's really important to be as descriptive as possible about what is necessary from the actual physical part of your job and then your working conditions. So we did look at them. There were several consultants that were with me here. We all went back, and by and large, they're very, very good. They're very descriptive. So what we recommend is that, based on the questionnaires that were filled out, that somebody go back and just verify that if somebody said they lift 20 pounds on a regular basis, that it actually says that, it doesn't say 5 pounds. So it's just an updating piece that somebody just needs to look at. But overall, it was really good. There were very few that had more information that's needed. They just were very general in a sense, and so we said, watch a little bit more here. So that can be done and updated after the study's complete. And then the last two items were plan updates. We were asked to, in the survey, to ask other communities if they had actually done this exercise and looking at their compensation post Act 10. So there is an appendix E. It's really towards the end of your report. It's just one table, and about 50% of the community surveyed actually have already looked at their compensation post Act 10. And then the last part is the pay compression of public safety. We went back and we looked at your represented public safety staff, calculated their maximum salaries, and looked at them in relation to your command staff that is non-represented in making our pay plan recommendations. The maximum pay for a represented employee is below the midpoint of the lowest level command staff. So in the case of police, it would be a sergeant, for an example. So we did go back and look at that. The caution there is that if you continue to raise the pay of your exempt employees at a rate faster than your represented employees at a rate faster than your non-represented, you're going to start to really have some compression issues in public safety. So it's just something to be aware of, but we did look at that.
Again, compression that we're talking about is where a supervisor and the supervised pay, there's very little differential, which causes a couple of things. One is that there ought to be a differential, but there's no motivation for the supervised to become a supervisor. And then there's the management issue of there's no pay differential. So we had that in police and we had it in fire.
And there is overlap in the pay ranges. There's no way to eliminate that. But there is growth above the mid-range or even a little bit higher in some of the higher command staff where they will eventually make more than the person that is beneath them. But there's other factors that go into that. Overtime, obviously, for represented people or non-exempt, and as well as time of service. If somebody stays in the rank of patrol for 30 years, they may be making more than a sergeant. It just happens. It's not desirable, but it does happen from time to time. But we did look at that. So those were the other components that we were asked to look at, and that generally is the overview of the entire study for you.
Mr. Lubert?
When you're done asking any questions you have for Joel on the overview, I would like to give an additional brief overview of specific implementation plan, or we can save that for the fifth, and I'll, in the meantime, share it with employees. You can read it for yourself in excruciating detail on pages 82 through 86 of your budget. There's a one page perhaps on page 87. Just very briefly, when Joe Ellen says we recommend somebody below the minimum be moved up to the pay plan, the question is how do you get them there? All at once, day one, all retroactive, part retroactive. There's lots of details in actually moving people around. And I need to figure out all those details. So I've put together a fairly detailed
6,000 columns wide.
and I went through and then costed that out to see how it impacts its budget to make sure all the money this common council set aside, because just as a little reminder, none of the pay raises for non-represented employees that you budgeted for this year have yet been granted. All that money is held in abeyance to be awarded in implementation. Additionally, there was a 0.5% from last year, at the end of 2015, you said, let's only do the second portion of last year's raise, retroactive to July, and save that first half money, let it fall to the bottom line, and reappropriate that. So we've looked at all of that money to be able to be used to implement this so that we can address who's below the range and how to get them up. Who's been with us a long time, just barely made it in the range, maybe we need to acknowledge that in some way. And then how do we move people along so that we have a strategy to get them from the bottom of the range to somewhere where we want in the market range. And then there's the across-the-board sort of merit platform. So we've tried to address all of that and cost it all out. And there's a lot of detail on that on pages 82 through 87 of your budget. And that's a lot of the discussion I'll be having with employees on exactly how they're going to get it for them. Because each individual, not only each job class type, but each individual may be impacted differently based upon their tenure.
This is huge stuff. This is taking care of our employees, as Alderman Mayer has highlighted. So I ask the council, with all due respect, let's take a close look at these numbers and contemplate where you want to be, 65 or 70th percentile. Mark's got the numbers on that 6,000 column spreadsheet of his. But think about it. Think about how you want to implement. But I urge us all to act in a timely manner. This is important to the budget, but it's also important to our employees. I mean, we've been promising this to them for 5 years. Long time. Let's get it done. Alderman Mayer. Alderwoman Mayer. I was looking.
To me, table two is really important, but it's only talking about the salary. It kind of seems as though Franklin does very well with the benefits package. How is that going to be part of this in making decisions?
That's more of a question for me. So what the Common Council said when they adopted this or when they selected the contract they did, because there was an option to do what was total compensation, where you look at salary and you cost out all the benefits and you look at the whole big picture. It tends to be a lot more expensive, takes a lot of time. And what we said in our contract was, let's get the detail on salary, and then let's just collect the survey information on the benefits. What Dan and I anticipate doing is we'll go back and bring back and work through personnel committee recommendations on the individual benefits. It is my expectation, it will be my recommendation to you, that some of our benefits, since our handbook and civil service policy carried over some union language where I now have people who are all non-represented employees who have different benefits based upon their job class. We think as you've taken care of internal equity and unified the pay plan, the compensation side, there should be consideration on how to do that on the benefit side. So Dan and I will be working with the personnel committee and bringing those things through. And the total impacts of those will be a lot less significant than the impacts on the salary side, but it's still important stuff. And I expect we'll have the same process of communication with employees on those on the benefit side. And we'll try and move those through aggressively as well. I'd like to have most of them reconciled before the end of the year. Couple where we might have to have more detailed examination might take a little bit longer, but I would think most of it could all be resolved. I would probably say it's not worth waiting for that detail to implement the actual compensation so that we can decide what that is, how to implement it, and you know, hopefully easily before the end of the year make sure that the money set aside for employees this year are distributed. I would suggest that the Common Council encourage the personnel committee to have a special meeting so that in case they want two meetings, that by your second meeting in October, before you're getting to your November budget meeting, I think it'd be hard for me to get through the employees and personnel by your October 5th meeting. By your October 19th meeting, have personnel try to come back to you whether what's in the study makes sense from their perspective. They have a recommendation.
Alderman Mayer.
We have a couple members of the personnel committee here tonight. If they indicate they have questions, I will move to suspend the order.
Second. Second.
Unless they have questions. Okay, no questions and no issue.
Is there a motion to request that the Personnel Committee hold two meetings prior to October 20th to discuss this issue and come with a recommendation to the Council by October 20th?
Two meetings?
All right, I'll rephrase that. Necessary meetings to come with a recommendation.
Why don't we put it to the Personnel Committee chairperson and let her decide in discussion with Mark what's necessary?
I'm okay with any of that, but what I don't want to have happen is it just sits on a normal agenda and it may not happen.
And it might need to be chair or acting chair because the chairperson is for like the next 10 days. She's out of town. So they may need to have an initial meeting and get the same sort of discussion I'm going to give with employees and decide if that's enough or decide if they need subsequent stuff.
So a motion to schedule an initial meeting for personnel on October 20th?
And we want to have a recommendation from them by the
20th. By the 20th.
I think if you just refer it to personnel, we'll share with them.
What?
Alderman Taylor.
I don't even know why we need a motion, Your Honor, because I don't think we need a motion because I think you can talk to the Personnel Committee chair or acting chair or whatever and say, this is what we need to do. Can you work with us? And
right.
I don't think we need a motion.
Right. Agree.
It's fine, whatever you want. Well, I just want them to understand.
Right. Well, I don't disagree that, but I think Mark can carry the message in saying this is important.
And
this is why we need it.
Here
yeah.
Discussion.
So I think it can happen without a motion.
Yeah, but sometimes you got to tell the deal twice. Alderman Wilhelm.
We get a copy of your PowerPoint?
Yes, the city has it.
Okay. Yeah, we'll we can email it to you. We'll also be putting it on the employee portion of the website for any employee to be able to access as well.
So, Mark, for the October 9th, whatever that is, meeting, I'd ask that you, significantly prior to that, send the Common Council the specific questions that you'll want an answer to, without any specific recommendations. Here's what I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
So they have something all over this.
Is that for the October 5th meeting? The committee of the whole?
19th.
That meeting, okay.
Whatever the second meeting in October is. I'm going to count for it here. Okay. Any other discussion on this item?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
There is no discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We are adjourned. Thank you.